Hello,
and welcome
to another episode of Emissaries of Prophets. I'm your host, Stephen, and joining me in the studio today is your co-host, Marshall.
Hi.
Today we will be discussing, it's going to be a special treat, it's a hybrid episode, so we've really resolved this question of doing like more than one episode at a time. We're doing two episodes today. And what are those two episodes called?
Well, some episodes just don't seem to be really rich for what we talk about. And the fourth episode, Babel, air date January 24th, 1993.
It's conceptually scant. It's
yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a full episode, but is it a full episode?
Perhaps not all DS9 episodes were created equally.
And we also have episode 5, Captive Pursuit, air date January 31st, 1993. And I think it's a much fuller episode. There's more to work with in Captive Pursuit, in my mind. So that's where we're going with. So episode 4, Babel. Stephen, give us like a
Babel
quick rundown episode.
There's a problem. The station's a mess. O'Brien is working quadruple, double overtime, octuple overtime to get everything done. The replicators don't work. Everyone's riding O'Brien about it. He gets lippy. He's just a grouch about it. Anyway, so in his haste, he repairs one of the replicators on an abandoned section of the station where no one lives. He still hasn't gotten around to fixing Quark's replicator, so Quark starts using this one in the abandoned section. No harm, no foul. Except, dun-dun-dun, the Bajoran resistance left a biological weapon there, like, into the replicator, something that replicates a virus into the food that then spreads across the station. And the way this manifests is by giving people first Wernicke's aphasia, and then they die.
And then you die.
And then you die. You know, you get Wernicke's aphasia, and you die. But yet, weirdly, no physical damage that shows in the brains. Anyway, I'm over it. We're not doing that again. So we tried to record this episode once before. It did not go well.
Yeah.
It did. Anyway, so one thing leads to another. Kira kidnaps an old resistance leader off of the planet. Just in the first...
He's a scientist.
Yeah, scientist, yeah. Does some light teleport kidnapping. And then they fix it. Yay. Did I miss anything?
No, that about covers it. It does get to the point where the only people on the station who are not affected or not yet affected by, in a devastating way by the disease, is Odo and Quark. And they're forced to work together, even though they are mortal enemies.
Even.
it's sort of one of those...
they say they're enemies.
To say how Odo and Quark are actually fast friends. And working in that sort of like, we're friends, but we're on the opposite sides of the law, but we're good friends because we both care about people.
Fundamentally care, yeah, about each other, yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's their arc, so we get a little bit of that.
So, and, I mean, like, it was kind of a canned episode. There's not a lot that happens. Most of the time is, like, spent examining Wernicke's aphasia, where, you know. These characters speak in ways that the brain just doesn't send the right signals, so they can't understand language. They can think something, but then when they try to vocalize
it, can't articulate it.
Doesn't come out. But it comes out as words, just not the right words.
Like word salad.
But it comes out as a very poetic word salad. Yeah. The writers must have had a lot of fun.
Somebody was a failed poet, in the writer's room there. Yeah.
It was great.
Or maybe a successful poet. You can't. There's no difference. So
I think so. Some of the things, like some of the, there was a little bit of some stuff that happens though at the very beginning. I have some major questions about sort of how the resources Starfleet has put into the station have been allocated.
Sure.
Because you see O'Brien, he's like, I haven't slept for 3 days, which is just, one, not
that's
healthy.
That's an OH&S issue, yeah.
And like his effectiveness would go way down. Somebody's just got to tell him to like go to sleep. Yeah, well, you'll be way better when you wake up fresh.
Yeah, well, and they nearly unleashed a deadly, deadly virus on the entire galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all because O'Brien was overtired and missed something, you know?
So, I mean, like, they have some resources on this ship, on this space station, but O'Brien seems to be the only competent engineer they have, and he's so overworked. I'm curious, like, why they don't take some of the other science people that they have. Like, what is Dax doing right now?
Yeah.
She is also qualified to go around and fix some computer systems.
Or why isn't this automated? Like, why isn't this automated out? Yeah. You know, it's supposed to be everything's this high level of automation in the Federation. So, yeah, it's a curious thing for sure.
And you did have a neat observation, though, sort of like O'Brien being the Irish working class.
Yeah. I think it's just I mean, this by and large exists just to contrive this ridiculous incident of him mouthing off to Sisko. And Sisko being like, well, I'll take it, you know? Which I think is also, when we get into the next episode, kind of, again, plays into their dynamic, you know, that kind of O'Brien's sort of a holy fool, you know? He is the one guy who can tell Sisko where to shove it in certain circumstances. So I guess in that sense, that's going on. But yeah, it's a lot of, you know, like, I'm not going to do the accent because that'd be terrible of me. Every time I try to do an Irish accent, it's real bad. Marshall's laughing. He's seen it. He knows it.
The first time he tries, I don't know what accent
it's so bad.
Out.
And then I pause and
then he gets something, you know, half decent,
recognizable as an Irish accent, if not good. At least still some. Anyway.
Otherwise, I mean, again, like the idea of resources and sort of what's your best alternative? Like, what's your opportunity cost to the resources you've and your the way you deploy resources?
Yeah.
When they find out that they have this incredibly debilitating and very virile.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, like, well, in the failed episode that precedes this one, we talked for a long time about like zoopathy and virus evolution and you know, immunochemistry and. We're not going to do that again.
But
this is wild.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
It incubates really fast. It spreads really easily. It's a devastating disease.
It goes from being like a surface virus to being an airborne virus, which is like again evolving from being like a thing that a slug to a bird, like, you know, like
you know, and Sisko rightly quarantines the station. But what I don't understand is Starfleet just sort of leaves them there. I'm like, well, you've got one doctor on the station. He can solve the problem.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
Like, don't send us your files. We're not going to send anybody in hazmat suits. Like, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. What's the worst that's going to happen? Yeah. Everybody in the station dies? Okay.
Well, why doesn't the Federation have hazmat suits on the station?
What? Like, well, and it might have been too late for people.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Because they didn't know they were infected until they were infected, and the hazmat suit won't help.
You have Vernix aphasia, Ebola.
Like, you would think that the Federation would go, oh, wow, that's a lot of people who are going to potentially die. We can send one of our medical vessels or science vessels or something to help you with that process.
Mm-hmm.
When instead, you know, for the sake of tension on the show, Kira goes in and uses a teleporter, a transporter to kidnap and infect a prestigious scientist
from Bajor.
From Bajor.
Yeah.
Which would, you know, probably be considered an act of war. And so I just question sort of like who is in charge of briefing somebody higher up in the Federation.
Well, I think
that they said, oh, yeah, no, that's not a big deal. They've got a handle on it.
Sisko's very lightly supervised, it appears.
This disease that could wipe out.
Yeah.
All life in the galaxy.
Yeah, which is, I mean, and I think we talked about this in the past, like, that this is something of, like, this is in part the frontier mentality, you know, that's kind of, but, you know, and so it's like this kind of question is, yeah, like, how big is the, how, I mean, I really do like it. I like it whenever dispersions are cast onto the, like, the organization and the integrity of the Federation, whenever they're like maybe, oh, they don't have their shit together. They're just, like, literally dropping people off places and being like, make it work. Bye.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it is. That's what empires in their aggressive expansionary periods do, you know?
And maybe they said, you know what, like, somebody, some source of power within sort of the center of the Federation pushed to have them administer the station on Bajor, but it could be that they don't have sort of the political clout to add any more.
Yeah.
Supplies
they,
there, right?
Like, or they got, or they,
like, we've already put in all the supplies we're willing to do. We're not adding more. Like, it's, it could be like I'm suffering from the sunk cost fallacy, and I'm like, you've already got 300 people on this space station. You could invest the time of a research vessel. And they're saying, nope, that nebula is more important than those 300 people.
Yeah.
We decided.
We need to have phasers pointed at the Romulans at all times.
Yeah.
So. I mean, this happens, right? And I think also we're talking about this, like, you know, Federationist Gunsmoke, you know, Western, you know, that Western Frontier analogy, which was absolutely how westward expansion happened, right? It was not a, centralized. There wasn't a general staff of colonial expansion. It was like, give those people guns and march them out to the edge.
Or people would just gather up their own guns. And
or gather up their, yeah. It's just like a general call out, like, hey.
Hey, if you want to go that way and kill people along the way and take what you
I have
take,
no problem.
We're not going to stop
you. We're not going to stop you.
We won't call that murder.
Yeah, so I mean, this is clearly more organized.
So, anyway, that's the episode of Babel.
Yeah, biological weapons is really, I think, kind of it's kind of like this question of biological weapons.
Yeah, it's more about the morals of should you even do that? Mm-hmm. Should you you implant a hidden, undetectable device that is as likely to kill innocent lives as it is the people you're aiming to kill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think the parallel might be landmines.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, yeah, any sort of trap or booby trap. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think, like, I mean, I don't know about this, but I believe in the in 1993, the Landmine Convention was being discussed. So there's the UN proposed a convention to ban landmines.
Most
countries have signed. The United States continues to refuse to sign the Landmine Convention to this day and is burying mines. Well, I mean, he's continuing to bury mines in Syria today. I mean, just because Trump said the mission's over doesn't mean they're business as usual till they actually get to leave.
But there are still landmines in lots of places all around the world.
Yeah,
and the most people who are harmed by them
are children.
Are actually children or farmers.
Yeah,
people who had nothing to do with the conflict.
Yeah, and many years later.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, people in France still die from World War II landmines. And that's.
I think that might be sort of part of the parallel. So it's like it's landmines, but it's also biological warfare. It's sort of like melding these two things. Yeah. Like, should we use I don't know, like gases on people or releasing viruses, things like that.
Yeah, and it kind of it alludes to the fact that there is some sort of space Geneva Convention. I think a little bit because why is everyone not doing this to everyone all of the time?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, especially
as a method of warfare, it seems really.
Like, couldn't I beam a robot onto a ship, like, clandestinely? It buries itself in the replicators, pumps them full of virus, and then that virus can literally be programmed to wipe out an entire species. Like, this could be like.
You don't even have to have the robot embed itself in a replicator. You can have that robot be a replicator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Replicating
like,
weapons.
That's all it needs. Yeah. It's just a tiny replicator.
Yeah. That's true.
For viruses.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, replicating weapons is a thing that's a huge, that becomes essential to the defense of the station later on.
That would be really quite devastating. Like, you just fly by a planet and beam down
replicating weapons.
Replicating
It'd be horrifying.
Viruses.
Like, replicate, like any
and
kind
each
of.
Each one of them replicates a different virus.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden people are like, oh, shit, this planet is uninhabitable.
Yeah, but even like replicating conventional weapons.
Yeah,
like if you had like a kind of like walking landmine that replicated itself and then just went and hit places and popped out and blew
that
up.
Comes up later.
Well, yeah, it does come up. Yeah, replicating weapons are really actually quite horrifying.
They lay mines outside the wormhole.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Against the warring
Cardassians. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
space
the space mines are self-replicating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're also teleporter mines in the Dominion War. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
You just reminded me.
Yeah.
So yes, anyway, that's the episode of Babel. I think it's more, not that economics doesn't have moral questions in it, but this is much more of like a moral.
How do you conduct yourself at war? And it seems up until this point in the show, they have only shit on the war record of the resistance. Like, it seems like every episode we're learning about like another horrible thing the resistance did.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
We also do some really terrible
things. Yeah. I mean, we've been scant on the details about Cardassian crimes. We've been very at length about the Bajoran resistance's crimes up until this point. So I think that's an interesting tact. And again, very very Reaganite consensus 1990s U.S. foreign policy position. The rebels are pretty much untrustworthy bad guys always.
Maybe.
Well, I'll sell you on this.
The Bajorans, though, are like the good guys.
I've amended my language from Clintonite to Reaganite consensus, I think, for clarity.
I think that's a good change. Okay, so the second episode we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Captive Pursuit. It's a really great episode. There's a ship that comes through the wormhole, unrecognizable. No one has seen it before. It has new energy signatures that are unrecognizable, and it is tearing itself apart. It's taken some damage, and the ship is at risk of blowing up. So they hail the ship, talk to somebody on board, and they're like, "Man, we got to beam you out of there. You're gonna die." And he's like, "I refuse to abandon my ship.
I am Tosk. Like,
go down. Yeah, you're the captain. Go down with your ship. That is your role. Everyone, every Starfleet member should be like, just salute you. Completely understand, because they would do the same."
Is that the? I'm always presumably. Confused. I'm always confused about how much like the law of the sea, or like by extension, the law of space, is like a thing, or if it's just like a bunch of like opaque warrior traditions.
I mean, we just see so many times captains going down with their ship in Star Trek. So I just kind of like assume that it has to happen.
Fair enough.
Like, yep. That's what you do. Because isn't that like what happened to Sisko's captain?
The Federation is so baroque sometimes. Like they're just like, no, my ship is going on.
Yeah. So, and then O'Brien says, wait. I think we can shore up support in the ship by using our tractor beam some way, but he just has to turn his engines off. And so he says,
we get him into a mooring clamp.
Turn your engines off, friend. And the guy says, but why? And he says, I'm trying to save your ship, friend. And then Tosk turns his engines off, and then he says, O'Brien is like, hey, friend, you should be feeling the tractor beam.
The gravitons. Anyway.
Getting onto you now, friend. Because throughout this entire episode, O'Brien just refers to this guy as friend all the time.
It's because he's friendly.
It was weird.
Yeah.
So they get Tosk onto the station.
He's a weird dude.
He can turn invisible. They figure out what's wrong with his ship. Tosk, you know,
he's
wants
in a real
to find
hurry.
Out how to. He's in a big hurry, and secretly he's trying to get to their weapon supply. Then some new guys come through the wormhole, and their one ship is incredibly powerful. Like,
just turns off the shields.
Sisko is like, okay, let's let them scan us. Everything's okay here, folks. And then he's like, okay, now it looks like they're doing something dangerous. Let's turn our shields on. And the ship just shoots radiation at them.
A type of radiation O'Brien has never seen before.
I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I don't understand that at all. That radiation was just radiation.
Well, yeah.
Anyway,
it's a band. It's a band. Like, anyway, yeah. It's like saying a new element. Like, I mean, yes, they exist, but we know about almost all of them, and the ones we don't know about are basically like impractically. Anyway,
we'd probably be able to recognize them. At the very least.
Yeah.
Is radiation on the EM band?
Yeah.
So then they'd be like, oh, okay, well,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's kind of what I thought, but anyway. Shoot some radiation, it turns their shields off, a bunch of guys just, like, beam onto the ship, they bear some weapons and start shooting.
Yeah, they have cool crossbow.
Really cool helmet, like, they wear this, like, sweet red Santa suit with, like, a helmet.
With lights in it.
With lights in the eyes. Like, this is great.
They're like low-budget space marines.
And the Federation people are shooting at them, and they can just, like, put their arm up and absorb the shot, which is great.
But only on their arm, because if it goes under their forearm, they fall down.
They get hit on the body?
They fall down. But they also get up again.
But then they get back up. You're like, it doesn't knock them out. They just can't stand up.
They are like Chumbawamba.
Oh, I get knocked down. Apparently the Federation, though, is just like they're not able to fight them off.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite.
Odo also says, they're not going to take anybody out of my brig. Like, somebody makes the, like, they're like, they're after Tosk.
Yeah.
Just let them take Tosk. And Odo is like, I'm not letting anybody take
a prisoner
out of my brig over my dead body. And Kira's like, well, you might want a phaser then. He's like, thanks, Major, but you know I don't use those. And just continues to watch the scene from behind a pillar.
Odo is going to defend the station with his moral authority.
It was amazing.
It's the most Odo thing you can do.
It's the most Odo thing you can do. So then the guys get in. They look in the brig, and it's empty. But he just turns on his headlamp and kind of waves it randomly in a cell. Sees Tosk's hand, and he's like, wait, I better find his face.
Better check the face. It could be another invisible guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more due diligence than a lot of police officers. We got him coming tonight. Just
they see Tosk. Tosk stops being invisible. And then they're like, this was super disappointing. You're a terrible Tosk.
Yeah, we find out
that it's like really like, I don't know what the culture is because we never find out what their species called. But the red-suited aliens are hunters, and Tosk is their prey. He's bred as a species specifically to be hunted. Like they raise them to be, you know, really powerful hunters and clever, and they get their own ship, and then they go off hunting.
And we find out Tosk means prey.
Essentially, that's what it is. Yeah. I mean, it's probably more loaded than that, but
sure.
It's prey. He doesn't have a name. He just is Tosk, which, you know, that's a thing, whatever. And then Sisko gets all, like, morally...
outraged about it.
Yeah.
But also is like, I guess I'm fine with it.
And is like, you can't do this to people. He's a sentient being. And they're like, it's our culture. Damn that prime directive.
Well, I guess it is the
90s. I'll let you go.
It is the 90s, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think... Can I have a digression at this point? Is it okay? Or should I save it till later? Okay. So I think something that's really weird to see now, because we feel like in the 90s was this big question of like, oh, what is cultural acceptance? What is tolerance? What do we tolerate? What can we not abide? You know, all these things. And then kind of it's kind of this like this proto version of like what we have now in Canada, like this doctrine about like barbaric cultural practices and stuff. Like, what can we abide? What can we tolerate? You know, and a lot of that was even from the earliest form directed at Islam, actually, to be like, you know, was directed towards like, you know, yeah, like things like veils and things like that. Like, is that something we can tolerate? Is that something that's aberrant? You know, all those kinds of things. And so it's interesting to see that conversation when it was like towards like, well, maybe we should push this to like extreme limits of what we include now to mean, which it's like we need to restrict, which that how that discourse is rapidly contracted. But it's essentially an extension of the same discussion about what does it mean to be tolerant and accepting of other ways of being.
Yeah.
Wild. A lot happens in 26 years.
26 years. Yeah, so they're going to leave the station. O'Brien has a brilliant idea that he'll just, like, break Tosk out because that's what he does. So he's just like...
Well, because Tosk, having been caught by the Federation and then just handed over to the aliens is, like, a huge embarrassment.
Right.
And Tosk is like, Tosk is going to be made fun of by children and have to beg for scraps of food.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, because being brought home in a collar is, like, the worst thing that can possibly happen to you, I guess.
Yeah. So O'Brien breaks him out. They do some shenanigans. You find out that Tosk is actually like a pretty powerful fighter.
Yeah,
if you give him a chance.
Yeah.
Single-handedly just like knocks guys over and
steals a gun and shoots three guys with one shot.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then he flies off, and that's when you find out that his like greeting, or not greeting, rather, I don't know, what's the opposite of when you greet somebody?
Yeah, your sign. Farewell. Yeah,
your farewell.
Salutation is,
I don't know. He says, die with honor. Mm-hmm. To O'Brien, and O'Brien's sort of put off, and then he's like, die with honor, Tosk. Sort of accepting that, like,
Tosk's
outcome in life is going to be death.
Yeah, but it's also, like, literally, like, I can't tell you what to do.
Right.
I can't.
Yeah.
I actually cannot, like, tell you how to
And I guess O'Brien earlier did try to convince Tosk to claim asylum.
Yeah.
Which would grant Tosk, then the Federation would have the authority to say, whoa, he's claimed asylum, you can't harm him. We'll protect him.
Mm-hmm.
But Tosk said, no, that's not, I'm not willing to do that because it would be a disgrace and a dishonor to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then O'Brien sort of is like, I get it.
Yeah.
I'll help you live your life the way you want to live your life, and I'll stop interfering. Like, I'll be
person. I'll undo the interference we've already done.
Yeah.
And then, of course, while this is happening, Sisko's like, Odo, they have him. They have Tosk and O'Brien. But Sisko says to Odo, there's no rush.
There's no rush to, like, put up force fields.
Yeah,
around
to them. Stop this from going. So he basically says, like, nudge and a wink, like, let it.
Let him go.
Yeah.
And then it ends with Sisko dressing down O'Brien and then abusing his authority when O'Brien says, now, wait a minute. Didn't you also commit the same crime that you're yelling at me for? And Sisko says,
I'll never tell. Freeze frame, roll credits.
And then, like, it actually ends. The scene, like, the scene in the episode ends with, like, Sisko turning to and smile sort of halfway at the camera. That is just, like, it was kind of gross.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, yeah.
I just, like, it felt like a complete abuse of authority. And he yelled at O'Brien and threatened to, like, rid him of his position.
Yeah.
But then, like, winks at him and is like, but I did the same thing and no one's going to tell me off. I don't know. Like, if you're going to yell at somebody for something, don't also tell him that I did the same thing and I'm getting off scot-free.
I mean, he's indicating that it is perfunctory, that the dressing down is perfunctory. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about, and this is the nature of power, right? That,
yeah.
That, you know.
It's perfunctory.
That the misconduct
wants it to be not perfunctory.
The misconduct of the supervisor becomes the misconduct of the subordinate.
I think if at any time Sisko actually became upset with O'Brien.
Yeah,
like,
he could totally use that.
He'd point back and be like, I already gave you a warning. You're off the ship. Leave your uniform behind. Yeah. You're not in Starfleet anymore.
Definitely. He's got a citation. Dishonorable discharge or like whatever they have in the Federation.
It's kind of gross. Yeah. Anyway.
Maybe get like a participation medal. I don't know.
So, okay. Couple of things.
Yeah.
The very, very beginning of the episode is like a quick discussion between a new Dabo girl.
Yes.
And Sisko.
Yeah.
And the new Dabo girl is like, I don't know, you get a reputation as a Dabo girl and like people think that you're going to do sexy stuff, but that's not what I'm about. Like, I'll wear the costume, but I don't do the sexy stuff. And Quark has told her, no, you'll do the sexy stuff. It's part of the job. And then Sisko's sort of like, part of the job? And she's like, yeah, it's actually in the contract.
Look at this contract.
Part of the job.
Yeah.
Which then, like, she's not just saying, like, Quark's not just saying it, like, it's part of the job, wink, wink,
no,
nudge,
no, no,
nudge.
It's literally,
he's saying, like, the contract you signed says you will do sex stuff.
This has paperwork. I mean, we don't find out exactly what it is, because she's, like, just about to say, they're just about to speak it when Kira comes on the intercom and artfully cuts off the description of the untoward act that they were discussing.
Yeah.
Which is very artful. And
but so know. Sisko.
So insert
like,
your own.
Disagrees and is like, you can't do sex stuff as part of a job.
I'm going to talk to Quark.
And then he's like, I'm not going to let Quark enforce this part of the contract at all. Which maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. I don't know. The Dabo girl says, you know, I'm not a legal expert. How could I have possibly been expected to have read this contract?
It says rim job.
And know.
You should have been warned by that.
How was I supposed to have read this contract and know that it had sex stuff in it? There's no possible way. Which is an interesting defense of like, yeah, I just signed a contract without actually reading it.
I've clicked on a service agreement to a software without having read all of it. Maybe it had the word rim job in there. I don't know.
Maybe Microsoft can come back to you and say, do the sexy stuff.
I like you. I clicked on a thing without reading it. Nope, there's no help for you.
Now Microsoft owns my body. It raises for me though this question of like the legal status of sexy stuff in work in Bajor, because
well, they are a theocracy.
That station is Bajoran, and presumably Quark wouldn't be writing a contract that includes an explicitly illegal section.
I mean, it wouldn't be enforceable.
It wouldn't be enforceable.
Yeah. And you think the very, very sacred spiritual Bajorans might have issues with that.
I don't know.
I don't know. Hard to say.
I think there's some religions that are completely okay with sex.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm projecting.
I'm just curious for myself, like, what is the legal status of sex work
in Bajor? Yeah.
Because here's Sisko just saying, like, I will not let him enforce that clause of the contract. You're like, do you have the authority to? But it is sort of a running thing with Sisko that if he's morally outraged by something,
yeah,
he just
well he can renegotiate on her behalf.
I guess.
But I guess we can.
But if he says, if Quark says no, like I'm not interested in then, negotiating, she can what? Quit? Or is it in her contract that?
Well, I mean,
maybe she needs paid. Maybe she took a loan from Quark to like,
yeah,
get transport to the station for the job, and was going to pay off that loan over the course of employment.
Yeah, maybe it's indentured servitude. So we have Bajor. Bajor allows sex work, and Bajor allows indentured servitude. This is what we've learned.
I mean, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think, but you know.
Here's Sisko, like White Knight riding in, moral outrage flying. I don't care what the laws are. I'm the boss here in Gunsmoke.
Well, it's fair. You know, I mean, he is saying basically you cannot be coerced into sex work.
She wasn't coerced. She signed a contract.
That she didn't know was a condition of the contract.
What other conditions didn't she know? I put air quotes in there. Maybe she didn't know that she had to pay Quark back for the transportation to the station. Maybe she didn't know that she had to show up to work on Mondays.
Well, no.
I didn't know. I didn't read the contract. There's no possible way you can make me do any part of this job. I thought my job was to just stand outside of the door of your shop,
but there
and talk
are
to new people.
There,
and not be a Dabo girl at all.
Sure, it becomes this issue of what to what extent are people required to.
I don't think it becomes that issue. I think it already is that issue.
Well, it already is. I mean, this is exactly the issue and I think it's a current issue with contracts.
Like, do we know that she didn't know about that part of the contract?
No.
Or is she just relying on the Federation not allowing sex work?
Okay, but here you have this.
She might have been a very conniving person saying, I'll take this job, then I'll go to the Federation. I know they don't allow sex work. And now I can get out of it.
We have an obligation. Well, I mean, but my thing is, if a person wants out of sex work, they should be able to get out of sex work anytime they want. No one should have to stay in sex work because they are economically held there. Because that, right?
100% agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But then what's the value of a contract at that? Because no one should be held to any work, not just sex work. You shouldn't be able to be bound to any job by a contract.
Right. Fair
enough.
So
at any point, she should be able to say to Quark, I'm not comfortable with this job. I'm leaving.
Yes.
But she's saying, I'm not comfortable with aspects of this job.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do some of the job, but not the rest of the job. And Quark is saying, that's not the job I'm offering you.
Yeah.
I'm offering you a job.
Yeah.
You can either take that job or not take that job. You don't get to pick and choose what parts of that job you get to do.
Yeah, that's
And I think that's fair on Quark's part. He said, part of your work is sex work. You can either have that job or not. But you can't coerce me to employ you, but not employ you in the way that I'm willing to employ you. That's just not fair as a businessman, like in any way, right? To say, yes, Quark, you must hire this lady, but you must let her only do the parts of the job that she wants to do. You have to hire her though, right?
Well, I mean, you could make, I mean, we don't, it depends on the details. Like, you know, like... No, but I feel like, okay, because the thing you need to have a contract, contracts need to be founded, need to be rooted in consent. And there are ways to extract a tacit consent or even a signature that do not genuinely, like if you lie, you can lie to someone about the content of a contract, and if you lie about the content of the contract and they sign it, you can make an argument that that was void.
Yeah,
you
know, I would say that would be void, for sure.
Yeah, so I think this is really more of the issue here, that she was either
and
through...
I'm completely willing to say the contract is void.
Yeah.
But she seems to be saying, I want the job, but I only want half the job.
Yeah.
Which is like if Quark hired a bouncer, and the bouncer said, yeah, I'll work here, but I'm not going to throw anybody out of the bar. Like, I'm willing to look tough, but I'm not willing to do the tough part. Would you stay hired as a bouncer? No.
Right. She wants to renegotiate, and Sisko evidently is going to do that for
her. He's not even going to renegotiate, though. He's going to say he can't enforce this clause. The contract stands, but for this part.
Yeah.
Which, that's not renegotiating. That's just him enforcing his will.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying, like, it's as unfair to Quark to force him to hire a person for a job he doesn't want them for as it is to force that person to do a job they don't want to do.
Sure.
Neither one of them are like, willingly entering an engagement with each other at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's unilaterally altering the terms of the agreement.
Right.
He's Vadering. He's Vadering.
I don't alter them further.
Yeah. We had an agreement.
Anyway.
People have seen the movie, I guess.
We got way off track.
We really did.
Anyway, contract. That's kind of my stance.
Right.
If it exists, both parties have to enter it willingly. I don't think anybody outside of the contract can come in.
Right. And things can be voided.
Enforce things
right.
in a contract. If Quirk renegotiates, that's cool.
I mean,
if he doesn't, that's also, she can quit.
Yeah. I guess thinking from like something more of like a, again, because you have like a common law type understanding of things, but then you have to also think like, you know, well, what is, how does consent and those things work in relationship to power and inside? And again, it's about this whole institution of private property and how does it function when at the intersection between the Federation and other territories.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the things about the Federation that I think is so interesting in a certain sense, is that the thing you always see with for the Federation, everything progressive about it is mostly somewhere else.
What do you mean?
Right? Like, I mean, like, all the stuff about, like the not working and, like, you know, and no use and no engagement with currency and all this stuff. All that stuff is happening outside. It's always happening inside, on the places where the Federation is interacting with people, with currency, with sex work, with all these things. You know, they are always dealing with that, and they are always accepting that. You know, so let's not even go into the sex work thing, I guess. But everything that's supposedly great about the Federation is allegedly somewhere else, because in the Federation, because in Starfleet, they are an imperialistic entity with all these coercive measures inside it and so on.
Yep.
Which, the longer I'm watching the show, the more I'm like seeing that and being like, wow, okay. Like, everyone talks about how progressive Star Trek is, and there's all this kind of progressive concepts embedded in it, but where do you actually see it?
Yeah. I mean, there is an interesting thing that, like, happens in DS9 frequently, that they have to pay somebody in gold-pressed latinum, and they don't have it. They have to, like, round it up from somewhere. They have to try and get some.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've wondered about this at times, that, like, the Federation is a post-scarcity society. Are the Ferengi not post-scarcity society? Or do they just continue to keep currency and sort of, like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
as a measure of prestige.
Yeah, but if you're
like, we could not use currency, but this is the way that we measure our own prestige amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just keep it as a cultural relic, right? And the Federation decided to do it in other ways,
because
the Federation definitely has its own hierarchy of prestige.
Definitely, more to explore, I suppose.
I think so.
All right. Well, we've been talking for a while now.
Okay, couple of other quick things about the episode.
Okay.
At one point, O'Brien shows Tosk to a room and says, you know, get some rest here. If you have any questions, ask the computer.
Mm-hmm.
O'Brien leaves. Tosk immediately goes to the computer and says, computer, show me a layout. And they're like, internal or external? Internal. Okay, we have a lot of options here. It's a big station. Which part do you want to see? Show me where the weapons are stored. And they say, this level right here. And like gives him a map and highlights it. It's like a dotted line, like how to get there.
You are here. like you're at a mall kiosk.
The computer just like gave out where the weapons are stored to a random person with presumably no security clearance whatsoever.
And the station didn't know that he was searching. Like, that thing is crazy. Like, Odo didn't get an email that was like, someone's asking where the guns are around here?
Yeah.
We thought that was weird.
Do you think the computer would say access restricted, and then Odo at the same time would get a pop-up and like, bling, you have one new message from ship administration.
Hmm. Yeah, Saudi Arabia can do it for like home-brewed beer. Why can't, like...
that just kind of like, I was like, wow, that computer.
I mean, evidently Federation takes like search query privacy very seriously.
He was using DuckDuckGo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess that about does it for us. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Emissaries of Profit. Profits?
Emissaries of Profits.
We'll get there.
I don't know.
We'll learn the name of this show that we're doing eventually.
Something like that.
We just need to keep doing it. So we actually got some feedback. I sent you those texts. I got those texts and those messages.
We
got a lot of feedback. A lot of technical concerns. So we're collecting your feedback and your technical questions, and I think we're going to compile that into something we'll address down the road. So thank you to everyone who messaged me and emailed me and called me in the middle of the night. No, just kidding.
I don't thank those people.
I don't think. No one called me. But anyway, thanks for the people who did get back to me and actually who had questions and concerns. We hope to address them actually at some point. And we always appreciate to receive feedback from people. So thank you very much. If you want to give us feedback, if you think, no, you are wrong about Holodex, then you can reach me at Steve at androidsandassets.ca. There's no period in the first part, or at Steve Droids on Twitter. Marshall, how can people get a hold of you?
I'm Marshall at androidsandassets.ca. That's MARSHALL at androidsandassets.ca. Or on Twitter, I am Econoboid. You're also quite welcome to just tweet the show itself, at AssetDroid.
Absolutely. And then, Marshall, one thing is I'm just spitballing here now, because this is, why not make an important decision like this? Should we do a live meet? Should we, come to this bar in Edmonton?
Oh, wow.
At this time? I'm not saying we do it now. But I'm saying, is that a thing?
I mean, yeah, let us know.
If you're interested in doing that, we would totally, want to play, board games or something. We would love to do that with you.
That'd be a lot of fun.
You'd get energize the base, as it were. Yeah. So now that we know there are people out there listening, let us know.
We'd love to meet you.
Yeah.
IRL.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of your time. I don't know when you're listening to this. It's probably on your way home from work. But
hopefully you're listening to it with a new friend, though, that you've decided to share this show with. You've got an earbud in one ear for you to hear and an earbud in one ear for them to hear. You're sitting close on a bus, riding along, going from, work to home or school or something like that and saying, I have this really cool show. And maybe it's a stranger.
I don't know. I'm listening to
to share this with somebody. So you just pop out an earbud, throw it in the person next to you.
No, thanks. I'm listening to season 1 of Serial again.
Every day. I can't
believe
it.
Are
we
advertising
for other shows on this show?
No,
now?
I just can't
get it. Is Serial paying you?
It's been 5 years and I still see people watching, listening to season 1 of Serial on their phones. When will they stop?
People find new shows all the time.
I guess. I just see...
There were multiple shows that I listened to, and I was like, wow, that was kind of cool. And I just, start at the beginning of this show, and I just listened to their entire library.
Yeah, fair enough.
It happens.
It does.
It happens. Anyway, share the show with your friends, or your yet-to-be friends, still strangers, beside you on the bus. Because the more, the merrier, and...
Who knows? If you evangelize enough, you might be canonized in the Androids and Assets lore one day.
Yeah. We could say, February 25th, that's your day.
Saint Jordan's Day. Jordan's, boy or girl.
Saint Jordan's.